This is a CBC original podcast.
So the first time I actually touched the oil, we were on an island out in the Gulf somewhere, and there it was, and like you felt compelled to touch it, and so I put my finger into it, and I rubbed it around, and saw that it was oil. It's goopy, gooey, kind of sticky, reddish brown goo. And I rubbed it around on my fingers, and we took video of it. And I thought, okay, now wash it off. Surely this will just wash off. And I stuck it back in the water, and it didn't come off. And it freaked me out. And I rubbed it, and I put sand on it to rub my hands and just try to get it off me. And it wouldn't. And I thought, this isn't good.
We knew the oil was coming about 2 days before because the flies came first. Yeah. They had flies all over the place. All of a sudden, woke up one morning with nothing but flies, and they had an odor of petroleum in the air. And then we knew the oil was coming, you know. And about 2 days later, this was like in a sea of oil, you know.
But let me start at the beginning. I'm Paul Hunter, and this is Backstory, the BP oil spill 2010.
More than 30 boats are involved in the cleanup of a large oil slick on the surface, but Coast Guard Rear Admiral Mary Landry says at this point there is no oil leaking from the Deepwater Horizon wellhead, which is 1,500 meters below the surface.
This spill is holding everybody hostage, not only economically, but physically, and it has to be attacked on all fronts.
The leaking oil has not reached the coast, but there are fears it could cause an environmental catastrophe if it does.
If this thing would have been a mistake, I could live with that, but this wasn't a mistake, it was just pure greed.
The oil leak in the Gulf of Mexico has now eclipsed the Exxon Valdez disaster as the biggest oil spill in U.S. history. What's more, scientists say the oil is gushing at a rate four times greater than BP first estimated.
How in God's name are you ever going to clean up that much oil? I mean, it stretches for 100 miles.
The fishers and the shrimpers, who could no longer go catch fish or shrimp, they thought their lives were over. They thought this was it. I mean, besides, there's tourism, but then there's the fishery. And it's like, that's everything down there. And every fisherman or shrimper that you talk to, well, what are we going to do? This is what we have always done for a living. And they didn't know, nobody knew, what the future would be at that point. This was everything they knew, and they didn't know how long the fishery would be closed for or how long it would be until the shrimp could be caught again. They were terrified.
The people are going to start dropping dead in the next 2-3 years over this stuff. Can you put a price on that? Nah, man, you can't. You can't put a price. Once you get this shrimp in your system and your blood, it's going to stay there till you die. And if you die quicker because of BP, you're just going to die.
So like everybody else, they were freaked out.
Maybe it's going to come true what they say. It's going to kill all the bottom life. If that happens, I have no idea what we'll do next.
I think the hardest part in covering the spill was demonstrating the scale of it, because it wasn't a tsunami of oil washing up, and yet, at the same time, it was massive. And it's one thing to talk about, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of barrels. Nobody really understands what that is, right? You need to show it. And it was hard.
We know there's a huge oil slick out there. It's currently coming this way. Now, does the weather change? Does the wind shift? Does the current pull it away and get it out towards the Florida Keys? We don't know. So we'll plan for the worst and hope for the best.
Hey. we would go on the beach every morning and look for oil, look for tar balls, right? And the first tar ball was just walking along the beach, and there it was. It was like the gooeyest, runniest cow patty from hell that you'd ever seen. It was just, that might give you cancer, you know, for all anybody knew. And it was just, bloop, there it was. And then there's these small crowd of kind of people in swimsuits stood by and took pictures of it and then went back and lay down and soaked up the sun. Because even though everybody expected this wave of oil, that never really happened. It would be these cow patties of oil and these little tar balls and these little blobs. But over the course of time, they were sort of everywhere.
So I'm walking and I stepped down, didn't even see the tar, and I can't get it off my toe. Then I tried to wipe it off my hand. It's just, it's on the bottom of my shoes. It's terrible.
Is that about the size of them, those things?
I've seen a lot that are bigger than that, but not much. It's a small dinner plate size is the biggest I've seen.
This makes us so sad that our beaches are ruined. It really does. It makes me want to cry.
And with the cow patties, with the tar balls, with these blobs of oil, came the guys to clean it in their yellow hazmat suits, and it was freaky. It's like you're walking along and like you've got your bare feet on and things like that, and here's these guys that look like they're on Mars or something picking up the stuff. It reminded you that we didn't know what this stuff would do. Would it, like what if you touched it, you know? And it's all out in the water, and the fish are eating it, and it's landing on plants along the shores of Mississippi and Alabama. And they had the full-on suits. It's freaky.
I feel sick to my stomach. It's really a bad thing to see this, to be here.
Time after time, BP appears to have taken shortcuts that increase the risks of catastrophic blowout.
I mean, I've been all over, and it's bad. There's oil all over the grass, and I know people that's getting sick just by going out there and cleaning up.
You know, we kind of thought that BP would become a kind of instant pariah. And I don't know that it did. It's a complicated place along the Gulf Shore because, like, for example, you know, there would be a protest, and we covered one. There, you know, people went to a BP gas station, and they had placards and things like that. And certainly people were angry that the well could not be contained and that oil was spewing into the Gulf because it threatened the fishery, because it threatened tourism, it threatened the way of life along the sort of shore of the Gulf of Mexico down there.
This is my home. Those waters, those animals swimming with the dolphins, that's my life.
But at the same time, everybody kind of understood that we're all a party to this, right?
The problem is all of us, every single one of us. I drive a big old truck. We're all guilty.
In Pensacola, one day, we were walking down to the beach looking for tar balls. And we walked through the parking lot to get there. And I noticed all the SUVs. And on the beach, I noticed all the plastic surfboards that people were using. And along the boardwalk at the beach, there was a guy with a gas-powered, leaf blower using it to blow away sand. But it's like everybody's using oil to power the SUVs, to make the tires of the SUVs, to make the plastic surfboards, to power the sand blower. And everybody's standing here worried about the oil that might wash up on shore. And at the same time, everybody is the cause of needing to find the oil.
We also understand that the oil business does a lot for South Louisiana. And it was a big part of what made South Louisiana or Louisiana as a whole what it is. So it's kind of a catch-22 situation.
and we talked to, we found somebody who was, that you would describe as an environmentalist, who had a SUV, a small SUV.
It's a Toyota SUV, so it's good on gas.
And she ultimately had to acknowledge it's complicated. And nobody could, you know, square the circle, because the truth is gray. Everybody wants it to be black or white, but the truth is in the middle, and everybody kind of understood that we use oil all the time. We're the reason that they're drilling down there. But man, when it breaks, we don't want it on our beaches, and we don't want it in our marshes, and we don't want it killing our fish.
Leading to this death and destruction, my solemn pledge is that we will bring those responsible to justice on behalf of the victims of this catastrophe and the people of the Gulf region.
Five years later, we met a guy who went out to try and help immediately after the spill happened, and as he tells us,
it just hits you sometime to cough.
Had the dispersant corrects it, the dispersant that was sprayed on the oil, kind of landed on top of him.
One night, we heard the plane pass. But they would tell you to get in your cabin, you know, and don't come out until 2 hours. Like, dude, don't come out in 2 hours, everything's dripping.
Did they give you respirators?
No.
And he breathed it in. And 5 years later, he's got this nagging cough that no one can say is exactly a result of that. But what he does know is he didn't have this beforehand, and he's had it ever since.
I can't go no more to the doctors. You know, every time you go, it's $200 to $300, and, you know, I don't have no insurance. I can't afford insurance.
We met a guy who was a shrimper who spent his whole life down there.
Everything I worked for, 30 years of work, down the drain, you know.
Who still to this day sees shrimp coming in his catch with what appears to be like tumors or oil, or it's like, and can you directly say this is from that? No. Did he see it before? He says no.
I don't know if I'm gonna live or die in the next few years. Every night I lay in my bed, I don't know what's gonna happen to me. I mean, I don't know what they did to me, but I know my body ain't the same as it was before BP.
And he says he has memory problems and things like that. And is that because of breathing in corrects it at the time, or fumes from the spill? No one can say for sure, but all he knows is it wasn't like this before. And like, what do you say to these people, right? Like, this is where they live, and everything about their life has changed. And they blame the BP spill.
I get calls almost weekly from people looking for something that we can help them with. And there's not much I can do. I don't have any magic bullet to shoot them with or magic pill to treat them with.
5 years later, we met a lot of people who are still saddened, and they believe sickened by what happened with the spill, whose lives are different and changed and worse, and will, they worry, be forever.
Makes me sick. Other than the physical act of being sick, it makes me emotionally sick.
And they say, oh, well, move out from the area where I'm gonna go. I've been born and raised in Leeville, 7 miles from this spill, you know? And I'm 60 years old. Where I'm gonna go? Where I'm gonna go start something new? So I'm just gonna finish it up right here, do what I gotta do here.
Everything I worked for all my life is down the drain. I'll never get back to where I was before that, never. Never. I don't care if they give me every dollar they got. They ain't got enough money. It ain't about money. This is my life.
Backstory is recorded and produced by Cecil Fernandez. I'm Paul Hunter.
For more CBC original podcasts, go to cbc.ca/originalpodcasts.